Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Rishi Ruvacha Evam Kritra Priyaya Vibhashita Pratya Bhyadhatta Prahasan Surit Priya Samsmaruto Marma Vidha Kuvag Ushishun Yan aha ko vishvas rajam samakshataha Rishi Uvacha. The great sage Maitreya said, Evam, thus, Giritraha, Lord Shiva, Priyaya, by his dear wife, Abhibhashitaha, being spoken to, Pratyabhyadatha, replied, Prahasan, while smiling, Surit Priyaha, dear to the relatives, Samsmarataha, remembering, Marma Vidha, heart-piercing, Kuvak Ishun, malicious words, Yan, which, Aha, said, Kaha, who, Daksha, Vishvasrijam, of the creators of the universal manifestation. Samakshataha, in the presence. Translation, the great sage Maitreya said, Lord Shiva, the deliverer of the hill of Kailash, having been addressed by his dear wife, replied smilingly, although at the same time, he remembered the malicious, heart-piercing speeches delivered by Daksha before the guardians of the universal affairs. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. When Lord Shiva heard from his wife about Daksha, the psychological effect was that he immediately remembered the strong words spoken against him in the assembly of the guardians of the universe, and remembering those words, he was sorry at heart. Although, to please his wife, he smiled. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that a liberated person is always in mental equilibrium, both in distress and happiness of this material world. Therefore, the question may now be raised, why a liberated personality like Lord Shiva was so unhappy? Because of the words of Daksha. Clear so far, right? The answer is given by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Lord Shiva is Atmarama, or situated in complete self-realization. But because he is an incarnation in charge of the mode of ignorance, tamoguna, he is sometimes affected by the pleasure and pain of the material world. The difference between the pleasure and pain of this material world and that of the spiritual world is that in the spiritual world, the effect is qualitatively absolute. Therefore, one may feel sorry in the absolute world, but the manifestation of so-called pain is always full of bliss. For example, once Lord Krishna, in his childhood, was chastised by Mother Yashoda, and Krishna cried. But although he shed tears from his eyes, this is not to be considered a reaction of the mode of ignorance, for the instance was full of transcendental pleasure. When Krishna was playing in so many ways, sometimes it appeared that he caused distress to the gopis. But actually, such dealings were full of transcendental bliss. That is the difference between the material and spiritual worlds. The spiritual world, where everything is pure, is pervertedly reflected in the material world. Since everything in the spiritual world is absolute, in the spiritual varieties of apparent pleasure and pain, there is no perception other than eternal bliss. Whereas, in the material world, because everything is contaminated by the modes of material nature, there are feelings of pleasure and pain. Therefore, because Lord Shiva, although a fully self-realized person, was in charge of the mode of ignorance, he felt sorrow. End of purport. Very interesting and very deep. I'm going to read the translations for 13 and 14 and then again 15. So this is still Sati speaking to Lord Shiva. Oh, best of the demigods, how can the body of a daughter remain undisturbed when she hears that some festive event is taking place at her father's house? Even though you may be considering that I have not been invited, there is no harm if one goes to the house of one's friend, husband, spiritual master, or father without invitation. Oh, immortal Shiva, please be kind towards me and fulfill my desire. You have accepted me as half of your body. Therefore, please show kindness towards me and accept my request. And then this verse, the great sage Maitreya said, Lord Shiva, the deliverer of the hill Kailash, that's this Giri Tra. Tra is to deliver. Giri is hill. Giri Tra. So that's translated Lord Shiva. By his presence on Mount Kailash, which was otherwise ordinary, it became special. He became the deliverer just by being there. Lord Shiva, the deliverer of the hill of Kailash, having thus been addressed by his dear wife, replied smilingly, although at the same time he remembered the malicious, heart-piercing speeches delivered by Daksha before the guardians of the universal affairs. So in the purport, Prabhupada is indicating that in the case of an Atmarama, meaning a fully self-satisfied, fully self-realized person, there's no illusion left. There's no duality of Matra, Sparsha, Stukontaya, Sitoshna, Sukha, Dukada. It's not there. But here, apparently, just to hear Daksha's name and contemplate on whether his wife should go to this function of her father, Daksha, the thought of his ku vag ishun, vag means speech, and ku is bad. Malicious speech, ku vag ishun. Marma vidha, heart-piercing, malicious words. His thoughts went there. and he was feeling pained. Just to think of Daksha and the malicious acts of Daksha. That's not the conduct of an Atmarama. It's an indication of one being on the material platform, but he's Atmarama. So, why is this? Prabhupada points to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's answer, and I'd like to read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's answer. This is Bhanu Swami's translation of the commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Lord Shiva made his wife remember the arrows of sharp words which pierce the heart. Question: how can the sharp words of Daksha pierce the heart of Shiva, who is Atmarama, self-satisfied? Since Shiva is Atmarama, he is certainly self-satisfied. But because he is related to Tamogun, sometimes lamentation, illusion, attachment, and hatred manifest in him, with his supreme powers not visible. Now he's going to contrast, as Prabhupada did in the purport, in Krishna's case, it may appear to be lamentation, suffering, crying, mode of ignorance. It may appear to be, but it's not. It's the real thing that this is a reflection of, and it's ecstasy, steady ecstasy. Though Krishna is always self-satisfied because of having prema, in fact he is prema, he also shows lamentation, illusion, attachment, and hatred in relation to Yashoda, Baladev, and the gopis because of invisibility of his supreme powers. That is to say, the Madhurya eclipses the Aishvarya. The sweetness of the loving exchanges with the gopis or Mother Jasoda or Balaram, the coward boys. In Shiva, those moods arise from Tamogun and are filled with an experience of a shadow of grief. In Krishna, those moods arise from prema and are filled with an experience of the highest bliss. So this is not an ordinary audience can understand or follow this, but note, what's the difference between Lord Shiva and Krishna or Vishnu? So this is giving Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's diving into that topic. Since prema is the ultimate essence of the chit shakti, or the spiritual potency, these moods cannot be restricted by the Lord's being self-satisfied. That is to say, his internal potency is acting, and so his self-satisfied doesn't change, his self-satisfied doesn't check or stop the moods of his own internal potency. In his own internal potency, his self-satisfaction is the foundation, and it's manifesting in moods that look like lamentation, crying, and so forth. Grief. When the cowherd boys are lying by the side of the Kaliya Lake, he's grief-stricken. His dear friends. And then the Atmarama portion or standing foundation doesn't change. It's just another ecstasy of love. Different than Tamogun. However, destruction of demons is the effect of sattva guna alone. This is the Lord Vishnu function. in charge of Sattva Gun. And Lord Vishnu kills the demons. This is, he doesn't expand, he just makes terse statements. Because of the mutual friction of the gunas, Sattva Guna destroys tamas and rajas. Just as light destroys darkness, in this way, Krishna destroys demons. Far out, huh? Since he, Krishna, is Shuddha Sattva, through the effects of material, though the effects of material sattva are also present in him, parentheses, in the sense that they are handled by him, they do not affect him. This has been explained in the first canto, chapter 2, text 23. While I'm looking this one up, you can look up 7937. He's making reference to first canto, chapter 2, text 23, which is Sattvam Rajas Tamas Iti Prakriter Gunas Tire. Translation. The transcendental personality Godhead is indirectly associated with the three modes of material nature, namely passion, goodness, and ignorance, just for the material world's creation, maintenance, and destruction. He accepts the three qualitative forms of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Of these three, all human beings can derive ultimate benefit from Vishnu, the form of the quality of goodness. So he says, this has been explained in the first canto, and will be explained again at the beginning of the seventh canto, chapter 9, text 37, where it says, this is Prahlad's prayers. My dear Lord, when you appeared as Hayagriva with the head of a horse, you killed two demons known as Madhu and Kaitava, who were full of the modes of passion and ignorance. Then you delivered the Vedic knowledge to Lord Brahma. For this reason, all the great saints accept your forms as transcendental, untinged with material qualities. And long purport. So the function of delivering transcendental knowledge is a function of the personality of Godhead directly. And this function of killing demons is a function of Lord Vishnu, who is, just as it's described in the purport here, I'll read the sentence again. Destruction of demons is the effect of Sattva Guna alone. Because of the mutual friction of the gunas, Sattva Guna destroys tamas and rajas, just as light destroys darkness. In this way, Krishna destroys the demons. Since he is Shuddha Sattva, through the effects of material sattva, and though the effects of material sattva are also present in him in the sense that they are handled by him, they do not affect him. They are under his adyaksha. By his energy, maya jaksha, prakriti suyate sacharacharam. So, Lord Shiva is unique. Lord Shiva is... Oh, I gave you the wrong book. Mm-hmm. I need the fourth canto back, not the seventh canto. Trade you. Thanks. Okay. He has a service to do. His service is destruction. His service is also benediction giving for those who are devotees. And those who are daksha-like, he has a function. He destroys them. Or he destroys the whole universe at the time of cosmic annihilation. It's not that he does it alone. He does as a service. That means he is deriving capacity from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But in that service, there is contact with the tamogun. There's the mode of nature that destroys or brings darkness. So, subjectively, sometimes, not that we should start thinking, oh, Lord Shiva's in the modes or something like that, but sometimes, in his service to the Personality of Godhead, he becomes affected in his service. So, you know, the position of Lord Shiva being undisturbed, these two brahminical qualities, sama, dhamma, tapak shocham. So the first two, sama is the state of mind where there's equilibrium. One is not influenced by this or that feature of duality. And dhamma is one's senses thereby are controlled. And it's consistent, it's not occasional. It's consistent, it's always. And that's the position of Lord Shiva, but that's the position of the Atmarama. You know, like Shukadev Goswami is another example of an Atmarama. So when he was being, as stones were being thrown at him and teased and laughed at and by the children that didn't understand his position, you know, he wasn't annoyed. He didn't regard it at all. And when he walked into the assembly of the sages and all the sages stood to receive him, it was, then they realized who he is. They made a big mistake. And Durvasa Muni, not understand, he was envious of the acclaim that was going to Ambarish Maharaj. But when he came back, being chased by Sudarshan Chakra, his statement was, I didn't realize who you were. I thought you were like, you know, I'm more powerful than you and I'm going to compete. I didn't realize who you were. And so forth. We can't imitate Lord Shiva, but we can learn from this lesson that the real standard of from Bhagavad Gita, the real standard of transcendence is that such attachment to the Personality of Godhead that there's no feature of duality that moves one this way or that way. Na sochati, na kangsati, samak sarveshu bhuteshu, mad bhaktim labhate param. That's the standard. In transcendence, two things. This steady, ecstatic mood is the basis and support of whatever are the moods of any other feeling or any other behavior or anything, and it's the internal potency acting. Depart from that mood of service, even a little, and the material energy can influence, and so that ecstatic mood becomes another one. A troubling mood, a painful mood, a suffering mood. If that position of ecstatic service to the Personality of Godhead is lost, even for a moment. So, and the symptom of that is then one's discrimination. What this like, daksha, considering daksha, the mood towards daksha then becomes filtered or colored, like the language of Rishabhdev. Get the Sanskrit, as long as one maintains fruitive disposition at all, then one's mind becomes colored. And when one's mind becomes colored, then one sees according to that color. That's the fruitive disposition color. And one is, the capacity to discriminate properly is gone. Even in the mode of goodness. And so this is a unique situation. We can't compare ourselves to Lord Shiva by any means. But because of his service of contacting the mode of ignorance and serving the Supreme Lord, being in charge of that mode of ignorance, sometimes even he can be subject to this material type of, what's the list? Hankering, lamenting, feeling pain and pleasure due to contact with the modes of nature. For us, our reprieve from that contact with the modes of material nature is to always be in the mood of serving and pleasing the personality of Godhead. In that humble mood of service, we're protected. And then proper discrimination can be available to us, how to act in different situations that otherwise are very confusing, very perplexing, and filled with, artificially, unnecessarily filled with pain. There's so much pain and suffering in this world that's completely unnecessary because people have forgotten their relationship with Krishna. It sounds oversimplistic, but it's not. It's a fact. It's a fact. Externally, he's smiling. And his smiling is to please his wife. And he's pleased with his wife and he wants to reciprocate with her. But how he's going to respond is colored by this feeling towards daksha, his malicious words with heart-piercing viciousness in the assembly of all the leaders of the universe. It wasn't even like a private conversation, it was a public assault, malicious assault. He remembered it and felt pain, not transcendental type. Krishna, on the other hand, he can feel all kinds of things, and it's ecstatic. And those attached to Krishna can feel all kinds of feelings, and is ecstatic. Narada, in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, in one ecstatic moment, says, normally, the devotees don't like to talk about Krishna's leaving Vrindavan and going to Mathura. Besides, it gives them pain, because the Vrijvasis were feeling pain, but even more so, when worldly people hear this, they think, oh, I'm staying away from Krishna. Because if I get attached to Krishna, I may also have to feel that pain. Thinking is the worldly kind instead of the ecstatic kind, since they can't understand it, best to not explain it to them. But then he goes on for like a whole long section and describing in detail because it's ecstatic. It's so ecstatic, he describes, that after some time, Krishna, having been in Mathura, this is what it says in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Krishna comes back. And when Krishna comes back, it's so ecstatic being with Krishna, they forget that Krishna left. And then after some time, Krishna leaves again. Akura comes again from Mathura, and the thing happens all over again. And they're so absorbed in that mood of separation from Krishna, they forget that Krishna did it before. They're just, it's just joyfulness and just the carrying of the mood of meeting and separation in grand crescendos. And again, Krishna goes and Krishna comes back and stays for some time and goes again. There are different versions described by our transcendental acharyas how that works, but this is what's in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Any comments or questions? Yes. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur Ki Jai. Yes. I heard about one third of what you said. Did you hear the whole thing? Not chapter 3, it's chapter 2. 223, yes? Okay. He expands himself. It's not like he takes those forms, but he expands himself. It's very different. The he takes those forms is pantheism. We're not pantheists. Krishna expands himself. We're Vaishnavas. Krishna can expand himself or his energies as he wishes. That's different. Does that help? Okay. Yes. No. They don't become... Our consciousness does not become colored because of the elements we come in contact with. It's because of our forgetfulness of Krishna. Then we take on that association instead of Krishna's association. If we forget Krishna, then we become contaminated. There's a nice... very simple explanation that connects with this. Prabhupada was once asked, there was a flu going around, and some persons were getting the flu and other persons weren't getting the flu. So a devotee asked Prabhupada, is it one's karma that one gets the flu and the other doesn't get the flu? And Prabhupada's answer was, he didn't say yes or no, he said, when one's resistance is strong, one doesn't contract disease. When resistance is weak, one can contract disease. Same as this example. So when we're living in the material world, what to speak of extending, we say now outreach, we're doing some outreach work, then we're coming in contact with, you know, undesirable elements. Or grihasthas go to the workplace and there's undesirable elements. You go into the supermarket and there's undesirable elements. You go, you know, you live in the material world. So how do we protect ourselves from those undesirable elements? By spiritual potency, by spiritual practice. Or say connected to Krishna. That's our immune system. Our immune boost. Chanting, hearing, worshipping, staying within the internal potency. And we're not, you know, become affected aversely. Brahmabhuta prasanatma na sochati na kamsati. That's so, neither hankering nor lamenting over what that circumstance is. Just finding that, finding one's happiness within, that means in one's relationship with his personality and Godhead. Yes. Yeah, it was. Let me say back what I think you just asked. He has a service, and his service is to deal with certain elements in a certain way. So is his feeling just to facilitate his service, or is he actually feeling? That's your question. According to what it's saying here, it's both, not one or the other. He's feeling pain, which is part of what's necessary for the next thing that's going to happen. I mean, the later thing that's going to happen. You know, offer the head of Daksha. But not retaliation against Daksha for the words, the malicious words that he spoke. But for his offense that that brought the destruction of his wife. So that is what he's getting later on. So that's part of his service. Yeah. Yeah, that's later in the chapter. And then by the plea of others, he gives him another head, a goat's head. And that's very embarrassing for Daksha. He used to have this beautiful head, now he got a goat's head. Later in the sixth canto, it says he died of shame. Because he was this little movie star, you know. Now he's got a goat's head. And he was humbled. But he was also still envious. One can be humbled and still envious. That happened. And he maintained that in his next life. That's described in the sixth canto. We're at fourth canto now. So, there's a service. And one who is a servant follows the indication of the master. So, the answer to your question is it's both. That he was... No, one doesn't have to be a servant. You don't have to feel pain in order to serve in a particular way. Let's say Narada. Narada was insulted by Nalakuvera and Manigriva. It wasn't piercing words, malicious words, but it was offense. But he didn't take offense. He was contemplating how to best serve them. That there's detail describing his contemplations. You know, it wasn't at all. He maintained the Atmaram position without feeling any pain. He was just feeling compassion. So you don't have to feel pain in order to serve in an appropriate manner. If someone needs to be checked, if you're in that position to check another, as was Narada, as is Lord Shiva. So it's both. It facilitated his service, but it wasn't necessary for his service. Is that all right? Yeah. that's how Krishna regards the person. The previous presentation is how one regards oneself, or how one uses their mind and senses. The other is how Krishna regards that person. And specifically, Krishna is speaking of someone who does something that's very, very bad. Not just bad. Not even just very bad, but very, very bad. How Krishna regards that person. If, consistently, they're engaged in his unalloyed devotional service, and completely inappropriately or out of character, something very, very bad happens. How does Krishna regard that person? He regards them the saintly. He regards them according to the consistent, not that anomalous behavior. And then the next verse is, he personally corrects the situation. That's the internal potency. By his agency of his internal potency, he corrects the situation. Like, a nice example is Lord Brahma stealing the calves and the cowherd boys. Krishna corrected the situation. Very nicely. He didn't, like, you know, slap him around. He showed, you know, his Aishwarya position, and then withdrew it and just stood with unblinking eyes looking at Lord Brahma with his lump of yogurt and fruit in his hand, smiling. Took care of the whole thing. Okay? Anything on this side? Yes. Your question is exactly the point of the purport. Listen to the class again and you'll get it. It's unique. Like this question over here of, was he feeling the influence of Tamagun, or was it just like part of the arrangement of the Supreme Lord so he could do his service in that particular way? It's both. He was feeling something. And why? Because he's in charge of Tamagun. He's in direct contact with Tamagun. The glance of Mahavishnu for the purpose of creation, that glance is Shambhu. And the glance contacts material nature. Whereas Lord Vishnu never contacts material nature. But Shambhu does. So he's in direct contact, and sometimes that influence is there. You okay? Oh, I think so. Yeah. Well, if our position was to be in charge of Tamagun, then the answer would be yes. But our service is not to be in charge of Tamagun. That was his question, exactly his question. And it's if we're fully in the position, that's us now, not Lord Shiva. If we're fully in the position, or let's say Srila Prabhupada, fully in the position of service to Guru and Krishna, he was fully protected by the internal potency. You shared with me what the acharyas in Udupi said about, you know, seeing the film of what Prabhupada did and holding their heads saying, we could never do that. But he was protected. So it wasn't out of curiosity or sense gratification or fooling around or capricious. It was service. And he was protected. And same for us, in principle. The The operative principle is staying in the humble mood of service. And if we, like, you know, go this side or that side a little bit, we're in contact with the modes of nature. Because it's not service anymore. It's something else. Bhutpa, bhutpa, paliyate. It continues to entangle one, etc. So it's you know, back to Leela Mundry's question. It's unique. The standard that you described is the standard, and this is unique. He's got a special service. He contacts the mode of ignorance. And sometimes he's influenced. Occasionally. We don't hear, like, you know, it's not like Indra or something. Jitendra? Yeah, I've heard that one. I get burned, I've heard that one. Okay, I'm going to end there. Thank you very much. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jaya.